Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 12th of February 2020, the day after the New Hampshire primary. And I'm Derek Hunter, I am your host, and damn it, I came so close to winning $150. Mayor Pete, within a point and a half, a point, 0.14, 1.4 point, whatever it was, I came very close. And if the bet were on delegate counts, I would have tied, which I'm not sure how that would have worked out. But anyway, we actually have results from New Hampshire. Turns out Democrats can count when not having to count actual physical human beings or doing the screwed up thing with caucuses. Oh, there's a lot to get to, a lot of ground to cover. Who's in, who's out, who should be out and won't go out because their ego won't allow it. I have the answers to all of those burning questions. It was, of course, a Bernie victory, but in the delegate count, they ended up apparently with the same. Bernie and Buttigieg both get 9 delegates. The Democrats have such a screwed up system. How can the party running around telling us we've got to get rid of the Electoral College have a system to choose their own nominee that is this screwed up? The biggest news, actually, out of the whole thing is Amy Klobuchar. Well, actually, there's a lot of big news to come out of this. It's Klobuchar at almost 20%, at least at this moment, with 85% of the vote in. And Warren and Biden didn't even get to 10%, which means they get 0 delegates because you needed to get to 15% to get a delegate. So the former front runners, Biden, the former national front runner, and Warren, she was not that long ago ahead in the state of New Hampshire, walk away with a big goose egg. And you wouldn't, I get it. I get why they did it. But you wouldn't know it from their speeches and their statements. They're both kind of claiming a moral victory. And moral victories will get you nothing. Moral victories are a polite way of saying you lost. So we'll get into that. And we'll also talk about the Department of Justice trying to put Roger Stone away for 7 to 9 years for lying to investigators. 7 to 9 years. Basically, they wanted him to die in prison. At least the Mueller team of prosecutors did. And the Department of Justice stepped in and said, this is ridiculous. We're going to refile on this. And the left went absolutely haywire because they have a bloodlust for anybody who isn't on their team. They want to destroy everybody who isn't one of them. It's a sickness. It's an evil, evil disease. So we'll get into that. It's been a long night and it's a late start to recording. So this is, even though I said it yesterday and I went an hour, this will likely be a shorter show than usual simply because I do have to sleep at some point, and I do have to do a radio show for 3 hours in the morning, so I had to wait until the results came in before I could start making talking, as Quinn likes to say, as she sits silently over there watching Frozen on an iPad. So yeah, we've got all that to get to and more. It was quite a night for the Democrats, and of course, the president won the Republican primary. So that wasn't a surprise. Before we get into any of it, though, we have our Wednesday recorded commercial with our lovely, lovely sponsor. Love these guys. Life Change Tea. Joining me on the phone right now is the founder of GetTheTea.com, one of our lovely sponsors, our favorite guy, Ronnie McMullen. How are you, Ronnie?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Derek?
I could not be doing any better if there were two of me. I was just at GetTheTea.com and I noticed that you have a special. You got a big sale going on. You got the Super Tea. And then there's something that intrigued me. pine bark extract together. It's a great sale, but what, like most people listening, what is pine bark extract?
Well, it's kind of a hidden gem. Pine bark in a little pill does so much. And let's just go real quickly what it is. It is an antioxidant power, which means it likes to beat up on free radicals. And we've all heard about free radicals and the damage they can do to our eyes, the damage they can do to our brain. So this is one of the top antioxidant powers. The other thing it does is it is vitamin C regeneration. It protects against cataracts. It improves heart health. It improves varicose veins. You'd think right now this is good enough for me. Wait a second, there's more. It improves blood pressure. It helps with glucose, with diabetes. It improves your memory because it's crossing that blood barrier. How about allergies and asthma, arthritis, fertility, protects skin, wound healing? I mean, this is, goes crazy. And then, of course, it is really good for your immune system. So everybody should be taking pine bark.
Every time I talk to you, I learn something new, Ronnie. I wonder what you do in an average day and you find this stuff out and you bring it to us. And you can get it all at getthetea.com. And you have a special deal for our listeners?
I do. I have a special deal. You get the pine bark and you get the world's best digestive aid, which is the tea. And let me tell you something. The reason it's so good, you can get digestive pills, and that's fine. But when you're dealing with a liquid, it moves so much good. And one of the key ingredients in my tea is milk thistle. And look that up, what it does for your gut. So when you have this something this good, that's a number one American number one digestive aid, and you get the benefits of pine bark extract, all in a deal. And then, of course, then the topper on that is if they say Derek in the coupon code and hit apply, you're going to get free shipping on top of that. You can't beat this deal. And by the way, the pine bark is a 4-month supply. You take one every other day, but you can sneak a little more if you need to.
You can't beat it. You always come up with something great. You always have the greatest information. Ronnie McMullen, getthetea.com, our health guru here on the show. Thank you for joining us, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Yes, through the magic of recorded audio. Love those guys, though, and love Life Change Tea. Getthetea.com. Okay, the winner as of this point, as they're still coming in, but the results will likely not change, and it's really only by a few thousand votes, is Bernie Sanders up in New Hampshire with 25.7-ish% of the vote. Mayor Pete, 24.4% of the vote right now. Amy Klobuchar, 19.7% of the vote. Let's talk about this, because Bernie Sanders and his people and the loony left are ecstatic. Bernie has won. He has fended off the gay invasion from Mayor Pete. But you got to give the proper perspective here, which, of course, the Bernie Sanders camp has no incentive to do. Back just 4 years ago in 2016, Bernie Sanders won more than 60% of the vote. Crushed, absolutely decimated Hillary Clinton. That was a huge, huge shellacking. It wasn't all that surprising. He is a senator of the neighboring state, but he destroyed Hillary Clinton 2-1. This time, he barely eked out a victory by 1.4 percentage points. That's a massive, massive drop-off. Now, you can say, well, it's a much deeper field, many more candidates, and you'd be right about that. But if you look at his lane, his loony left lane, the openly socialist lane that he was trying to claim, and this, it's the same lane, by the way, that he claimed back in 2016, if you add, that would mean that you would add Elizabeth Warren's votes to his, her 9.3%, a pathetic showing. That would put him just at 35%, about half. Bernie Sanders' support dropped significantly from the Democratic Party. He still won. Nobody can take that away from him. But this love of Bernie up in neighboring New Hampshire was not as deep as you thought. You know, you could say that, you know, Elizabeth Warren hurt him, but again, she didn't pull 10%. You add 10% to his total, and it's still half of what he'd gotten before. That's got to be worrisome to Bernie supporters, because he's counting on the people who supported him last time to still be there. And a good chunk of them will be. But a bigger chunk of them, it looks like, won't be, or at least are willing to flirt with somebody else. That tells me something about 2016, actually. Hillary's vote in 2016 was for Hillary. It seems like at least a percentage of Bernie's vote in 2016 was a vote for non-Hillary, for not Hillary. She's not, he's not Hillary. I don't like Hillary. I'm going to vote against her. That actually jives pretty well with the all the data that shows that people who voted for Bernie Sanders in the primary, a good percentage of them, voted for Donald Trump in the general election. It highlights the anti-Hillary Clinton vein that runs deep in the Democratic Party and the resentment of the Democratic Party establishment last time trying to ram Hillary Clinton down everybody's throat. So I just found that interesting because I haven't seen anybody make that point. They say, well, Bernie's support is now diluted because there are so many candidates. Yes, to a degree, absolutely, but there's more there. And I think that all the bitterness and all the anger and all the tweets and all the complaints about server farms in Macedonia and sexism and, you know, whatever you, James Comey, whatever Hillary wants to blame this week, Russian meddling, for her loss in 2016, I think if you look at the results from New Hampshire, it suggests that a lot of it had to do with Democrats who simply did not like Hillary Clinton. They were not interested in Hillary Clinton in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, the idea of Hillary Clinton riding in at the end of a brokered convention, while still possible, seems like it would cause those old divisions to rip back open, which means I'm rooting for that to happen. I hope that happens. Okay, so the victory speeches and everything have sort of happened. They didn't make the call until exceedingly late because it was that close. So most of the people really missed the prime time of the 8 o'clock hour, which is when they thought they'd be able to make this call. Actually, you know, if you look at the polling data, Mayor Pete was 9 points behind in the Real Clear Politics average of polls. 9 points behind. He wasn't going to be anywhere close to this. And to have a photo finish is actually a pretty big victory for Mayor Pete. Granted, it's a moral victory, and I just said that that's just another way of saying you lost. But when you lost, you got to find your victories where you can get them. So as far as Mayor Pete goes, this was a really good showing. It'll be overshadowed by Bernie Sanders and his acolytes out there screaming that Bernie won, Bernie won, Bernie won. But don't lose sight of the fact that they both left the state with 9 delegates and Klobuchar with 6 delegates. They're on to Nevada next Friday, not this Friday. Mercifully, they're taking Thanksgiving. They're taking Valentine's Day off, but they're back to ruin the following Friday in Nevada. It'll be interesting to see how that goes there. That will be the first state with an off-white population. There's a large Hispanic contingency out in Nevada. Not so much the black vote. That'll come in the following week with South Carolina, and that's where Joe Biden is expecting to make his last stand. But it'll be interesting to see if Mayor Pete can take any of the momentum that he's built up in Iowa and New Hampshire and translate that to a race in a state that isn't overwhelmingly white. Democrats obsess about such things, so we kind of have to point them out. But it'll be interesting to see because he hasn't done well with off-white liberals. So Bernie has, because Bernie promises everybody everything. Bernie's as white as it gets. He's so white his hair is white. But when you're promising everybody trillions of dollars in freebies, that tends to override skin color somehow. Then it goes, by the way, let's talk about Joe Biden. Joe Biden could not have run a more incompetent campaign. He was a terrible candidate. He was just awful on the stump. He was snapping at people. He called that one guy fat, even though his campaign swore. He didn't say, look fat. He said something else. No, he was about to say, look fat ass. And then he caught himself. Because Joe Biden, they don't talk about it. It's always, oh, affable Joe, he's such a nice guy. You can see undertones of it in the interviews where they actually challenge him a little bit. He gets kind of hostile. Joe Biden has a bit of a temper on him. So people, I think, picked up on that. And in Democratic Party politics, that doesn't fly. You can't have a temper. You can't be mad. You got to love everybody except people who don't vote Democrat. Then you can say whatever you want to them. Joe Biden also snapped at that girl the other day and called her like a horse face loser or something like that. He was kind of joking, but behind every joke is a bit of truth. He wouldn't have said it if he hadn't thought it. But the real telling thing about Joe Biden's campaign in New Hampshire, after going on for months about predicting victory in New Hampshire, a state he'd never made it to in his two previous runs for president, he'd never made it, didn't make it to Iowa in the first one, didn't make it out of Iowa after the second one. He was predicting victory as early or as late as about 2-3 weeks ago in New Hampshire. He kind of needed it back then. But he ended up coming in fourth place with 8.4% of the vote. That is embarrassing. That's really, literally embarrassing. I will say I don't think it's as embarrassing as Elizabeth Warren, but it's still incredibly embarrassing for the former vice president to pull 8.4% and come in fifth place in a field that features a guy whose only resume of note in politics is being mayor of South Bend, Indiana, who tripled him, tripled his vote. So Biden, knowing he was going to not win, not knowing how badly he was going to lose, but knowing he was not going to win, didn't even stick around for the afternoon in New Hampshire, which is wildly dumb. It doesn't matter. They went down to South Carolina. He had a campaign rally down there because that's his firewall. I guess you got to get down there, but you could have gotten down there in the night, because once around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, word starts to spread that Joe Biden isn't sticking around in the state. He's not going to have a watch party. He's bugging out. If you're a Biden voter, supporter, but not super gung-ho about Joe Biden, and you hear that on the local news and you go, what the hell? And then you think, well, I could go out, it's cold, it's New Hampshire, it's February, I could go out, stand in line, freeze my butt off to check a box for this guy, but this guy's already conceded defeat, so to hell with it. I'm not saying that was the difference maker for Joe Biden. Don't get me wrong. Joe Biden was always going to lose New Hampshire, but he might have gotten over Elizabeth Warren. He could have gotten, because he's at 8.4, she's at 9.3. That's just a 1,000 or 2,000 votes. So when you look at the turnout and you think how demoralizing it would be for turnout, knowing that after work you're going to go and vote. That's when most people vote, let's be honest, after work. So after work, I'm going to go and vote. There's going to be a big line. I'm going to go and check the box for Joe Biden. I know he's not going to win, but I believe he's fighting for me. And then you hear, oh, by the way, Joe Biden packed up his suitcase and bugged the hell out of here as quickly as possible. He's already gone. He left at lunch. Well, you might go, what the hell? I'm not going to go out and vote for this guy. We've already lost. It doesn't matter where we finish. Most people don't think about how they finish as mattering. But if Biden had finished above Elizabeth Warren, I don't think would have had any choice but to drop out if she finished fifth place. And I mean, I don't think she has much of a choice but to drop out now. And she might do that tomorrow. Who knows? She didn't do it tonight, but she might do it tomorrow. But if you put her in fifth place, in a state that her state neighbors, in a state where she was the leader not that long ago, I don't think she has. I think the pressure to drop out is just too great on her at that time. So in a way, Biden leaving the state, heading to South Carolina and saying basically to his supporters, go vote for me, but I'm not going to wait for you. Screw you guys. I'm going home. Probably saved Elizabeth Warren, probably kept her in this race longer than she otherwise would have been. That's just my two cents. That being said, Elizabeth Warren's showing was incredibly pathetic. 9.3%. Yes, Bernie Sanders, Vermont, butts right up against New Hampshire, but so does Elizabeth Warren's Massachusetts. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are essentially the same candidates. They just use different bathrooms, as far as I know. So to have a choice to present this choice to the radical left in the Democratic Party. You're with us, or you're with the so-called moderates, who aren't actually moderate, but to say that we occupy this lane and we're ready to go and you have to choose between us, it seems to me like the voters in New Hampshire made a pretty clear choice. They said, we're going with them. We're going with the other people. We're going with Bernie Sanders. And so she needs to reassess herself. I'm looking at the history of polls. Elizabeth Warren was at 17% back on January 14th. 17, that's in the Real Clear Politics average of polls. But at 17%, she was at 14.6% on February 1st. Then the bottom fell out. Just absolute collapse, and she ended up with 9.3%. If that isn't collapsing support, if that isn't problematic, I don't know what is. Yet, of course, she's not ready to give up. I can't blame her, really. She's worked a very long time for this. She's done a horrible job, but she's worked a very long time for this. In her concession, it wasn't even really a concession speech. It was clear she wasn't going to win, but she came out and gave a rally the troops speech. She made it clear, at least for now, that she's not dropping out. You'd think she was making a big difference in this race if you listen to this speech. Let's listen to a clip.
The fight we're in, the fight to save our democracy, is an uphill battle. But our campaign is built for the long haul. And we are just getting started. I am grateful down to my toes for what our campaign has been able to accomplish so far. My plans for this country have been influenced by letters pressed into my palms by little girls. My will to fight has been strengthened by the people who have whispered their dreams in my ears. My determination to lead a movement has been forged by the tens of thousands of people who have said they are ready to fight for an America they know we can be. Because if we have the hope that comes with dreaming big, if we have the courage to fight hard, we are going to win. Thank you.
Sounds a little bit like a victory speech, doesn't it? It sure doesn't sound like somebody who just had their ass handed to them. And it sounds like somebody who isn't going to drop out anytime soon. Of course, she doesn't have the ultimate say. It is whether or not she can raise enough money to stay in the race. And that is an open question. It's not a good time for E-dubs there out in Nevada. She's currently polling third in the Real Clear Politics average of polls at 11.5%, just ahead of Tom Steyer at 10%. In Nevada, as of right now, and these polls are, these are from January, so there haven't been new polls in a while. So this is obviously not completely accurate. It has Joe Biden in first place, Bernie Sanders in second, Elizabeth Warren in third, then Tom Steyer and Pete Buttigieg back in fifth place. That is going to change dramatically. The polling is very expensive. You sit there and you wonder, well, why haven't we had any polls since early January? Because polling is wildly expensive. And nobody thought that Nevada would really have that big of a chance to have an impact on the race. Nobody, you know, for the longest time, I forgot Nevada happened between New Hampshire and South Carolina. South Carolina is where Joe Biden is going to make his last stand, and Nevada and New Hampshire and Iowa are always first. I forgot about it. So it's not going to get any better for E-dubs. So I suspect, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I've been pretty good with predictions of late, except for my $50 bet on Mayor Pete, which I'm pissed about. Man, that would have been nice. Elizabeth Warren drops out tomorrow. That's my guess. She has to go back. She has to put on a brave face for her supporters and at her campaign rally. She has to do that. It's the state right next door. You can't go out that night. And she also doesn't want to go out right away because she's put a lot of time and effort into this. I think tonight she's sitting, or last night now, she's sitting down with her campaign staff, her advisors, and most importantly, the money people. And they're assessing whether or not it's viable for her to stay in the race. I don't see how you can draw any other conclusion than it isn't, except if she has $5 million on hand. Maybe even $3 million. If she's got enough money to stick around just to get through it, you know, that sort of, let's just see what happens. Let's stick around and see what happens. That sort of attitude, that would be the only reason she stays in the race, the only way she stays in the race. I think that they're having a realistic conversation with her tonight that she has no path to victory. She has no way of winning. 2020 is not going to be her year. She ran a horrible campaign. They're not going to tell her she ran a horrible campaign, but somebody should. Somebody should point out to her, hey, Elizabeth, you probably should have had an answer over that 6-week period where you were pretending you weren't going to raise taxes on the middle class and dodging, and obviously dodging. Yeah, probably that's the moment when the air came out of your tires, but they're not going to do that. They want her to drop out of the race, I think, because then they can be paid bonuses for their work out of the remaining campaign funds. If she sticks around and runs through Nevada, embarrasses herself, it makes the campaign staff look worse. It also cuts into the amount of money they could possibly get paid bonuses out of. So I think her advisors will probably try to convince her, nudge her to get out of the race, unless they have some sort of internal campaign polling data in Nevada that says that you're going to finish third, because that's where she really needs to finish in order to sort of even have a chance of rejuvenating her campaign. Unless they got that data, I think they're going to tell her to get out. And I wouldn't be surprised that if tomorrow afternoon, Elizabeth Warren announced, meaning today afternoon, Elizabeth Warren announces that she is suspending her campaign because of whatever reason. And then it'll be a scramble for her supporters because they don't like Bernie. Remember, there's a lot of bad blood between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. They were fine. They were getting along just fine. And actually, Elizabeth Warren was doing a lot better before she accused Bernie Sanders of being a rabid sexist pig who said there ain't no way no broad ever's going to get elected president, not my lifetime. Then there was that bad blood. And there's really no way to make up for it unless one of them admits they're lying. There's no way to sort of heal that rift. So a lot of Elizabeth Warren's supporters were voting for her because she is a woman, which if she gets out, there is, because identity politics actually absolutely rules the roost in the Democratic Party. If she gets out, this could be the opening Amy Klobuchar was looking for. If there are, I don't know, 7% of voters in the Democratic primary or 5% of voters in the Democratic primary who are voting strictly based on identity politics, meaning gender, since there's no other diversity left since Andrew Yang dropped out last night, then that could actually boost Amy Klobuchar. We could be looking at a possibility. I mean, she finished third with 19.7% of the vote. She's getting 6 delegates out of New Hampshire. She didn't register. She didn't rate. She was an also-ran in New Hampshire up until the debate Friday. And then suddenly, it made a huge, huge difference. In the Real Clear Politics average of polls, Amy Klobuchar was polling 11.7%. 11.7%, and she ended up getting almost 20%. That is huge. The last poll before the election, the Boston Globe poll, which ended on February 9th, was out on the 10th. Today's the 12th, so it's just 2 days old. Amy Klobuchar was at 14%. So she outperformed all the polls, and she outperformed the polls by 5%. Now, Mayor Pete did, too. He was at 19% in that last poll, and he pulled in basically 25%. So it's also another indication of how awful polling is. But if you get Elizabeth Warren support and you take half of that, let's just say that half of her 9% in New Hampshire was based on women, her being a woman, her being the female candidate and thought to be the only viable female candidate. Well, those people are going to look for somebody else who fits that description. If you're voting because of the gender of your candidate and your first choice, that's overriding and overwhelmingly stupid. That is likely that going to carry over to your second choice as well. So that could bode well for Amy Klobuchar. It's just a matter of whether or not Elizabeth Warren wants to realistically assess her campaign and go, I can't win. I should probably save as much face as possible and get out of it. And that's going to be a very tough competing line of thought with, I've worked so hard for this. I know I can do better. Just give me another week and a half. We'll find out which instinct is more distinct when it comes to Elizabeth Warren. We'll know by tomorrow. I don't think, if she doesn't drop out tomorrow, she's in through Nevada. It wouldn't make any sense to drop out 2 or 3 days later. But Joe Biden is in no matter what. And we have some audio here. Actually, let's listen to John King from CNN talking about just how embarrassing what happened last night was, not only for Elizabeth Warren, but for Joe Biden. It really was. I mean, Joe Biden kind of came out and said he's going to lose. So the fact that it was a loss for him was less embarrassing. Elizabeth Warren was still holding out hope that she would at least have a decent showing and come out with a couple of delegates. That ain't the case. Here's John King from CNN.
These three on top, unless there's a dramatic shift with 42% of the vote in, you're going to have a Democratic senator from Massachusetts and a national liberal icon and a former two-term vice president of the United States come out of the first in the nation primary without delegates. It's one state. They say they're going to move on. But in terms of bragging rights, momentum, trying to get fundraising done tomorrow, that's embarrassing for both Senator Warren and former Vice President Biden. Again, we'll keep watching the results to see if they change. But that's been pretty consistent all that night. In single digits, won't get delegates. Raises the bar for fundraising and creates opportunities for others. Democrats want someone who can beat Donald Trump. It's hard when you're running fourth and fifth to make the case you're the strongest candidate.
You can't make the case that you're the strongest candidate to beat Donald Trump if you're coming in fourth or fifth in New Hampshire. Elizabeth Warren's fundraising is going to be tough. It is going to be difficult. Joe Biden has a higher bar, a steeper hill to climb, because most of his donors have maxed out to him. He has to find a way to expand his donor base, and there really isn't, you know, hey, I'm in fifth place is not exactly the best tagline. I'm inevitable because I was in fifth place is not really a good fundraising pitch. Elizabeth Warren still... tough, tough time for her ahead. And like I say, I'm going to put it at about 60% that she drops out today. That's going to be my big bet for the week. If I were that Jim Cramer guy, ding, 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 I'd be ringing all sorts of bells and doing all kinds of obnoxious things. But Elizabeth Warren can take comfort in the fact that she's at least not as bad as Joe Biden, I guess. I mean, everything is relative, right? Isn't it? Isn't that the way it works? So Joe Biden is pretty well done. He was a front runner. He was in the lead in New Hampshire as soon as I can get off this graphic so I can scroll down because the stupid way it's set up. He was at 23.3% as recently as January 15th. January 15th. And he ended up with 8.4%. That is being kneecapped. That is being just clobbered. He won't drop out. He can't drop out. It's kind of a vanity thing at this point, and I'm not sure he's fully aware. I think Joe Biden really believes that the black vote in South Carolina is going to save him. I think he thinks that that is going to be where his big victory is going to come in, and that's going to turn the tide. Even if he does win in South Carolina, and even that's in doubt because Bernie Sanders is making inroads with the black vote down there. And as he racks up more wins and campaigns more, I imagine that will only increase. But even if he does manage to win in South Carolina, he's done. Because after South Carolina, there's California. There is Massachusetts. There is Texas. There are places that are wildly expensive to campaign in. Joe Biden's fundraising is going to be garbage for the next 2 weeks. So he's not going to have the money to be a player in those states. Mike Bloomberg does. Mike Bloomberg is sitting out there. Mike Bloomberg is spending $300 million on advertising in those states already. So this is, we're watching a dead man walking, essentially. Joe Biden's campaign is done. He just won't admit it. Mike Bloomberg, who said he wouldn't enter the race unless Joe Biden entered, or he wouldn't enter the race if Joe Biden entered the race, and then reneged on that because he saw how horrible a candidate Joe Biden was, is now going to be screwing the guy he said he wouldn't enter the race if he was in the race, if you can follow that. So Bloomberg, I don't know how anybody can take Bloomberg seriously. I mean, honest to God, have you ever met a less charismatic? Not since Michael Dukakis has a lack of charisma existed with two legs on the face of the earth. But it's amazing how much charm having tens of billions of dollars can give somebody who is otherwise devoid of charm. On Joe Biden's front, the media was pretty harsh on him as well. Eugene Robinson, columnist for the Washington Post, had a blunt assessment of Joe Biden's past. It's things I've said to you before, but he said it to the Democratic Party's base on MSNBC, and he said it in a very harsh but realistic, I'd say tough but fair way.
Joe Biden has run for president three times now. This is the third time. I searched my memory. I don't think he has actually won a primary ever. At some point, you got to start winning some primaries if you're going to be a nominee and going to be president.
That's the biggest strike against the concept of Joe Biden's inevitability, is that he hasn't ever really won anything. He gets no credit for the two wins of Barack Obama. That nobody voted. Nobody goes, I'm not going to vote for that guy. But, ooh, that senator from Delaware that's wildly unpopular nationwide, he's sitting in the number two slot. Well, now I'm going to go and vote for Barack Obama. That race was all about the top of the ticket. So Joe Biden is a loser outside of Delaware. It's over for him. Plus, Joe Biden, more than Donald Trump, Donald Trump's popularity had gone up during this saga. Joe Biden comes out of impeachment and the entire investigation more damaged than, I would say, anybody else. Maybe Rudy Giuliani, just to his reputation, because he runs around and said crazy things. And you're like, what the hell are you talking about? But Joe Biden really got hammered. He was in front in all the polls before everybody started pointing out how corrupt his son was and how shady his son's dealings were with foreign countries. The impeachment hearing really shined a bright light on all of that. Joe Biden kept getting angrier and angrier. Nobody's ever accused Hunter of being corrupt. Actually, a lot of people accused Hunter of being corrupt. And a lot of people said, we should look into this. And a lot of people did look into this. And a lot of people heard things like this unqualified guy with a cocaine problem run out of the military, left his wife for his sister-in-law, and then cheated on her with a stripper and got her pregnant, denied paternity, married another woman after knowing her for a week, lost the paternity suit, made millions of dollars, but is hiding his money and his income, refusing to pay child support and all that. And you think, well, yes, the liberal line was always, the liberal establishment line was, Hunter Biden is an adult. He can do whatever he wants. He's responsible for himself. Yeah, but he's almost 50 years old and he's doing this. You don't have, you're not raised right, and then suddenly the wheels come off, right? You don't at age 45, after leading an exemplary life, go, you know what? I want to really get into the booger sugar and some whoring before it's too late. You don't really come to that. You've been sketchy your whole life, and I suspect if people actually looked for it, and I'm not recommending anybody look for it, I think that it's over for Joe and we should just ignore Hunter unless there's some illegality. But I suspect in Hunter's past, just judging by the way that he's conducted himself in his mid-40s, that in his 20s, and maybe in his teens, but where those records would be sealed. But in his 20s and his 30s, I suspect there's a lot of, let's just say, brushes with the law. Let's just say, not necessarily run-ins is the wrong word, but encounters with law enforcement, skirting of the law, running into gray areas of the law, all of these things. I suspect there are a lot of those in Hunter's past that we didn't hear about, that because they occurred in Delaware, where his father was, you know, God, a long-term senator, and because his father was vice president and his father was in with the Democratic establishment, then I think Hunter was kind of swept under the rug. I think Hunter got away with a lot of stuff because his last name is Biden, if I had to guess. Because I don't think you just start doing blow at age 43 and then leave your wife and start banging strippers after leading an exemplary life. That's just me. I don't know. It's a value judgment. I'm passing on Hunter Biden. Wild speculation on my part. It's my opinion. But I think that if you really, if some enterprising journalist out there did some investigation, they'd find at least more than we know right now. But with Joe's campaign floundering and it pretty much being over for him at this point, barring a South Carolina miracle, I don't think we're ever going to get that investigation, and I don't know that we necessarily need that investigation. As long as he didn't kill anybody or rob anybody, it's best to just let him go off into the sunset, because his earning days are done. His dad ain't going to be president, and much like the Clinton Foundation, which shut down after Hillary lost the election, the gravy train for Hunter Biden is going to shut down, because he's got no more access to sell. He's got nothing to go on. He's got nothing to offer. And speaking of nothing to offer, the was it Dana Bash and Jake Tapper, just to pile on, just to show you how once the tide turns for you, once you get the stench of loser on you, the media, which pumped you up, will turn on you. It's also an indication of just how awful these people are and hypocritical. They all act as though they weren't propping up Joe Biden for a long time and sort of trying to foist him on the American people. Over on CNN, Dana Bash and Jake Tapper had rather harsh words for Joe Biden. And if you went back in the archives 2 months, 3 months ago, even a month ago, I suspect you would not have heard anything remotely close to this sort of harsh assessment of Joe Biden as a candidate. They all loved him. They all supported him. They all got behind him because that was what the Democratic establishment wanted. Just turns out he's not what the Democratic voters wanted. And so now they have to bring in the realism and not really contradict themselves, but ignore everything they've said in the past. This is another tough but fair assessment of Joe Biden from last night.
I think we just also have to take a moment and just digest the fact that a former two-term vice president of the United States didn't even place, it looks like, we're not done yet, but it looks like he's headed towards not even placing in the top four.
Right.
I mean, getting single digits of support, not even getting enough support to get one delegate from New Hampshire. I mean, that is stunning. Now, he, at least at the end, set himself up for that by starting the debate, as you mentioned, with Arlette at the last debate, which everybody in New Hampshire who I talked to was watching, by saying that they wouldn't support him. Mm. But still, it is by far one of the biggest storylines of the night, despite the fact that his campaign worked very hard to set expectations at these levels.
No one has ever come in fourth in Iowa and fifth in New Hampshire and then gone on to get the nomination.
That's the polite way, the politically correct way of twisting the knife in his back and saying it's over for Joe. He just doesn't realize it yet. But it's over for Joe. Andrew Yang dropped out last night. I feel bad for Andrew Yang. He was never taken seriously. He was never given the media attention he deserved. MSNBC was constantly, no matter how well he was polling, if he was polling in like fifth place, MSNBC would leave him off and list the top six Democrats and not have Andrew Yang in there. It was just really, really bad. No one liked him. I mean, they all liked him affably, but nobody treated him fairly in the press. He was, I thought, the most affable, certainly the most likable Democrat out there. One of the I don't even know if you can pluralize it. He was the sanest Democrat that was out there. Still crazy, but seemed genuine. Seemed to kind of not... He was in over his head the whole time. He didn't really seem to understand how politics works. He wasn't capable of chiming in when he wasn't getting called on. He was always getting short shrift. He'd qualify for the debates, and then they'd barely ask him any questions and barely give him any time to speak. They'd give Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden all kinds of time to speak. How well did that work out for everybody? But... Andrew Yang just kind of sat there. He didn't understand that they're not going to give you time to speak. You've got to claim time to speak. You've got to take time to speak. And maybe he's just too polite to understand that. I don't know. But you'd think he would have picked up on it after a couple of debates and gotten back in there and started asserting himself. But it just never really came together for him. He got single digits in Iowa. He got barely anything in New Hampshire, and he called it a day. So there, if you were looking to get $1,000 a month from the government for free and the guaranteed basic income or whatever the hell he called it, your chances of that just dropped significantly. What's amazing is Tom Steyer is still in the race. I don't really know. I mean, maybe he's holding out hope that since he was polling well a month and a half ago in Nevada, that he's going to do well in Nevada, but I just don't see it. Tom Steyer's another guy who... It's amazing how you can have such a gigantic field of candidates and so few people with any charisma or energy. Bernie Sanders is awful. He mistakes passion for yelling. You know, he just yells it. We've got to do this. We've got healthcare is a right. Healthcare, college, free college is a human right. That's not really passion. You're just yelling. Mayor Pete doesn't even bother to yell. He doesn't seem to have any passion whatsoever. He's just kind of there. And no matter what's happening to him, he keeps an even keel. I find that more appealing than screaming at the top of your lungs all the time. But, you know, what are you going to do? I'm not a Democrat. I'm not going to vote for him. Joe Biden seems confused. Elizabeth Warren just sounds condescending. Amy Klobuchar, I don't know. She seems like your friend's mom. And you're just like, I don't want to hear this from my friend's mom. Give it a rest. And the rest of the field is gone. Deval Patrick is still technically in, although he'll announce today that he... And you're going, who? Deval what? Yeah, Deval Patrick, former governor of Massachusetts. He announced very late, never got anywhere, never made a debate stage. You wouldn't know he was still in, but he was still in last night. He pulled less than 1% or somewhere around 1%, and he said that he's going to reassess his campaign. And it's like, wow, what a genius idea. What the hell were you thinking? And what is it? Michael Bennett, senator from Colorado. He dropped out. So, yeah, you didn't know he was in either, did you? He was the guy that James Carville was campaigning with. So there you have it. There's your Democratic field. We actually got a vote count and on election night, which is a nice change. But the results are more mixed than the media is going to tell you, with Mayor Pete and Amy Klobuchar well overperforming the polls, Bernie Sanders underperforming the polls. What that tells you is either the polling was wildly wrong, but usually the polling's wrong, they're all wrong in the same direction on everybody. They were overestimating Bernie Sanders' support and underestimating Buttigieg and Klobuchar, which likely means that the polling was closer to accurate. But at the last minute, for whatever reason, Bernie lost support and those other two gained support. If they can figure out why that was, maybe they can do something with it. But who knows? In other news, before we run out of time here, because my mouth is getting the better of me, this is ridiculous. The Justice Department recommended that Roger Stone be sentenced to 7 to 9 years. 7 to 9 years. And you think, what? Did he kill somebody? Did he murder someone? No, he was convicted of lying to Congress. Lying in Congress, perfectly fine. Lying to Congress, that is beyond the pale and an outrage. So they wanted him to get 7 to 9 years for that. Roger Stone is in his 70s. They essentially wanted Roger Stone to die in prison. That's how vindictive and cruel the left is. Well, the Justice Department, these were the Mueller prosecutors seeking this death sentence for Roger Stone for lying to Congress. The Justice Department under Attorney General Barr said that, wait a second, that's ridiculous. He should do some time, but not 7 to 9 years. Think about everything that you hear Democrats talking about nowadays. We need criminal justice reform. Criminal justice reform. Nonviolent offenders shouldn't be going to prison. We have our prison. Now, there's nothing less violent than lying to Congress. You're just using your words, literally. You're not even selling drugs. Democrats are out there advocating for people who are putting heroin on the streets to be let out of prison because they're nonviolent offenders. Yet Roger Stone, they all wanted him to die in prison. So the Justice Department said, no, we're taking this back. We are going to resubmit this and request a different sentencing guideline. The four Mueller prosecutors resigned in protest, which is good, and good riddance. Get them out of the government. I don't want them cashing any more of our taxpayer checks, monsters that they are. And the Justice Department hasn't said how much time they're going to look for, but they are looking for significantly less time. And I'm sitting here and you're thinking, well, why? Why should I care? Just to juxtapose this with one case, and this one just happened to come up yesterday, so that's why I'm going to highlight it. It's from Time Magazine, Flagstaff, Arizona. More than 4 years after gunshots rang out before dawn on a quiet college campus that stirred fears of a mass shooting, an Arizona man has been sentenced to 6 years in prison for killing a fellow student and wounding three others. Let me read that again, just so in the context of Roger Stone, the Mueller team, the Democratic career political appointee prosecutors, which thank God have resigned, they wanted 7 to 10 years or 7 to 9 years for Roger Stone lying to Congress. Time Magazine, more than 4 years after gunshots rang out before dawn on a quiet college campus and stirred fears of a mass shooting, an Arizona man has been sentenced to 6 years in prison for killing a fellow student and wounding three others. Stephen Jones had faced up to 10 years behind bars in the October 2015 death of Colin Bro, 20. Rather than risk a potential second-degree murder conviction, Jones pleaded guilty to manslaughter and aggravated assault. Now, don't you love that? How in the hell he was facing up to 10 years? 10 years for second-degree murder? You can't say I accidentally shot him because you shot three other people, right? I was cleaning the gun and it just went off four times. No, that's not how that works. There was something more at work here. He wanted to kill people. He killed one. And he got 6 years. But a maximum, because the prosecutors out there apparently are incompetent or whatever, he was facing up to 10 years. So rather than risk 10 years, he took 6 years. Roger Stone, convicted of lying to Congress. Not good. You shouldn't lie to Congress. But convicted of lying to Congress, no body count behind him. His first offense, never been convicted of any crime whatsoever before this. And the Mueller team was seeking 7 to 9 years for him. Do you see justice there? Do you see the juxtaposition there? Do you see the difference? There's no Democratic outrage. The anti-gun left is not out there protesting about the injustice that happened in Arizona and how this violent gun guy is not going to do serious time. Why that's an outrage. You don't hear that at all. It's not happening at all. Because, well, this is a white guy who killed another white guy. What kind of hay can be made from that? So they just ignore it. 6 years for murder. Well, technically manslaughter, but I don't know how you call it manslaughter. And shooting three other people. And essentially a life sentence, 7 to 9 years for a man well into his 70s for lying to Congress about irrelevant factors in the Mueller investigation. You can see why the Department of Justice stepped in, and thank God they did. Justice is blind, but that lady is peeking. Democrats are pulling back that blindfold. Different sets of justice. And it's amazing, while all the talking heads on cable news were outraged that the Justice Department would dare step into the Stone case, dead silence about this case out in Arizona, where a guy who killed somebody, shot somebody, shot four people, killing one of them, gets 6 years. Yeah, justice ain't blind. Justice is, it was never blind. Anyway, that is, I got to stop it here. I got to get to bed. It's very, very late. Congratulations to all the winners and losers out in New Hampshire. The winners are the American people who don't live in New Hampshire because we weren't inundated with the candidates. And the losers are the everybody up there who voted in the Democratic primary. I'm just in a sour mood. Have a great Wednesday. Today's Wednesday? Yeah, today is Wednesday. Good Lord. We'll be back here on Thursday. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. I'll see you tomorrow.
That's embarrassing for both Senator Warren and former Vice President Biden.